Money Talk.
This is Akashwani. In the program Money Talk, now we bring you a discussion on India-Japan economic synergy, expanding trade, investment and strategic partnerships. The participants are Professor Rahul Mishra, International Affairs Expert, and Rajesh Lakh, Anchor.
Hello and welcome to Money Talk, the program where we decode the big economic stories shaping India and the world. Today our focus is on a landmark moment in India's economic diplomacy. Union Commerce and Industry Minister Piyush Goyal's visit to Japan, leading India's largest ever business delegation, over 200 industry leaders, startups and women entrepreneurs, with Japan committing a 10 trillion yen investment target in India over the next decade and bilateral trade already at 27.5 billion in FY 25-26. The stakes are high and the opportunities even higher. To help us unpack this, we have with us Professor Rahul Mishra, Senior Research Fellow at the German Southeast Asian Center of Excellence for Public Policy and Good Governance and Associate Professor at the Center for Indo-Pacific Studies, JNU, a leading voice on India-Japan relations and Indo-Pacific strategy. Professor Mishra, a warm welcome.
Thank you very much.
Minister Goyal is leading India's largest ever business delegation to Japan, over 200 members, as we said in the beginning. What makes this visit qualitatively different from past high-level trade missions?
Well, there are a number of reasons to say that this is an unprecedented, remarkable visit by the Indian side to Japan. First and foremost, it manifests the confidence that India has in its growing economy, which is growing at a very consistent and fast rate of 7.7%, and also reflective of the target, which is achievable, of making the Indian economy a $30 trillion economy by 2047. The beauty of this visit lies in the fact that today India and Japan are not just focusing on conventional sectors of trade, but they are focusing on strengthening linkages between Japanese companies and tier 2 and tier 3 of our supply ecosystem, and collaborate on industrial and tech partnerships. Also, in trying to increase the investments and the overall role of MSME sector in India and Japan. And they are looking beyond the conventional framework of trade in traditional sectors. So clean energy, innovation, technology partnership, startup partnership, which is already pretty strong with leading Indian companies like Ola and Flipkart benefiting from Japanese investment, but also in defense sector, in security sector and supply chain resilience. So really a wide array of trade and investment plans and very well designed and skillfully crafted strategy to cooperate and collaborate on trade and investment sectors.
Okay, Rahul, Japan slipped to fifth place among global FDI investors in India last year. What will it take to move Japan back into the top three? And does this visit signal a turning point?
Well, Japan has slipped to the fifth position in terms of investing in India, but that, I believe, is only temporary, because if we look at the areas of cooperation, there is really quite a lot that Japan and India can do together. And for instance, in his address, Minister Piyush Goyal, when he spoke to Kaiden Ran, the Japan Suffex Business Council, which comprises 1,500 business companies, at that meeting, this issue of greater Japanese investment in new sectors is what he focused on. So I think in emerging sectors such as semiconductor and other innovative sectors and technology, clean energy, critical minerals are the sectors where India and Japan could work more, going beyond the conventional sectors of steel and automobiles or healthcare, even insurance. So I think there are a lot of possibilities in terms of investing in emerging sectors where India needs a lot of investment. And I would pin my hopes on startup sector and clean energy, and also defense sector, where Japanese investments in next 5 to 10 years would bring it back to one of the top three investors in India. And Japan has certainly shown interest, and Japan has both the intention and the capability to bounce back as one of the top investors in India, which is something that benefits both the sides in the long run.
Okay. Now, beyond the bullet train, how is India-Japan cooperation reshaping defense manufacturing, which you touched upon a while back, critical minerals and supply chain resilience in the Indo-Pacific?
Well, JICA, as we know, the Japanese International Cooperation Agency, which is, of course, a government agency, and it is one of the most impactful investors in India's physical infrastructure. And you mentioned the bullet train, Mumbai-Ahmedabad high-speed train corridor. In addition to that, I think what India and Japan could focus in the next 5 to 10 years is the defense sector, where shipbuilding could be one area. Building or strengthening India's maritime capabilities, India's naval capabilities, is where there is a lot of scope. The two countries already have a number of maritime and defense agreements. A number of agreements were signed during the recent visit of Japanese defense minister to India. So I think in the defense sector, shipbuilding could be one. The radar system and reconnaissance systems could be other things. Drones and swarm systems is also something that Japan is developing its expertise on and emerging as one of the top countries in addition to China and the US. So those are the sectors where India and Japan could work together. And of course, U2 is always a possibility for India and Japan to collaborate in the defense sector.
Okay. And also, Minister Piyush Goyal pitched India's large market and expanding FTA network as a strategic advantage for Japanese firms. Now, how does India's FTA architecture with the UAE, Australia and potential UK-EU deals amplify Japan's global supply chain strategy?
Well, Japan, as all of us know, has been trying to shift its focus away from China during and after COVID times. The government of Japan and private companies tried to do a lot to shift their focus and find countries that have enabling environment and a greater ease of doing business in those countries. And India has emerged as one of the top countries. With India's number of recently signed FTA agreements, it is clear that India has the necessary capabilities to provide a conducive environment for greater investments and seamless trade between the two nations. And Japan's overall strategy is one, to diversify away from China, and second, increasingly, to also diversify away from the US. So keeping this in mind, India is certainly emerging as a third pole, as it were, in terms of Japanese investments and their idea of creating an alternative supply chain with India, and also countries that are partnering with India, UAE and Australia, the European Union, to name a few. So I think with this emerging regional economic architecture, transnational economic architecture, I think Japan has found the right spot in India to amplify its overall trade and supply chain routes, which could emerge as, if not a complete alternative, at least a kind of mechanism which can be strengthened and which would provide Japan with an alternative strategy in dealing with the uncertainties and weaponization of trade and supply chains that are coming from both China and the US.
Okay. Rahul, we all know Japan's strength lies in advanced technology and business practices, and India's strength lies in scale and domestic demand. Where do you see the most friction or synergy in aligning these two models?
Well, the Japanese way of investment, if you see the pattern, whether it is in China or in Vietnam or elsewhere in Southeast Asia, we have seen that they start with a very sector-focused approach and try to perfect that over a period of time, whether it is infrastructure. We know that in 60s and 70s, 80s, Japan focused a lot on it, building infrastructure capabilities and through their ODAs and other mechanisms. JICA, of course, played a very important role. Currently, Japan's focus is on strengthening their semiconductor industry and emerging as one of the top countries, and they find commonality and shared interests with India. India, as you rightly pointed out, can provide the scale. It has the biggest market in the world, and also it has the intention to emerge as one of the top leaders in semiconductor and tech and innovation sectors. I think what the friction areas are, sometimes there are a kind of incoherent policies of state in terms of inviting investments, and the policies that we have at the federal level and how they are implemented at the state level is something that has caused anxieties in Japan. So I think greater harmonization in state and center's policies in India, and also more coordination, greater coordination with Japanese companies, is something that has to be perhaps looked at more carefully. And in that context, the Japan Plus strategy or Japan Plus initiative, I think, is the right initiative at the right time, because the whole idea of Japan Plus is to make Japanese investments in India smoother and more efficient. So I think the government is already working on this idea and it will be realized soon. So I think we are witnessing conscious efforts by both the governments to eliminate or at least reduce the frictions that have emerged over a period of time in terms of realizing Japanese investments in India in a timely manner.
Rahul, the Quad has passed its survivability test, as you have also written. How does economic synergy between India and Japan strengthen the Quad's strategic posture, especially vis-a-vis China?
Quad has definitely proved its worth and it has shown its resilience over a period of time. For India and Japan, Quad is not just about security. They're certainly not interested in militarizing the Quad. So economic rationale makes a lot of sense for these two countries. Japan is interested in bolstering economic cooperation amongst the Quad countries. So the Japanese idea is to first strengthen cooperation with both Australia and India in terms of creating supply chain alternatives, in terms of increasing mutual trade and investments. And for that, Japan knows that if there is any country in the world which can provide an alternative, a credible, strong alternative to China, that country is India. So Japan is pinning its hope on India as it's part of Japan's long game, as it were, in the Indo-Pacific region. And that's why these investments from infrastructure to defense sector to MSMEs and emerging sectors of technology.
Okay. Japan's SMEs have been slower to invest in India, Rahul, compared to giants like Suzuki and Toyota. What incentives or policy shifts could unlock this missing middle of Japanese investment?
Yes, it is true that Japanese big corporations have invested in a lot, and you mentioned Toyota and Suzuki, but also in the banking sector, the SoftBank Group, for example, or Daikin and Hitachi. So these companies have invested a lot. MSE sector is relatively slower. That is perhaps because of India's own MSME sector, the constraint that India's MSME sector faces. And I think there is also a need for greater harmonization in terms of overall export outlook and bilateral collaboration approach. Once that is achieved, I think we'd see greater Japanese MSE investment in India. And that is also one of the key objectives of Minister Piyush Goyal's Japan visit, where he focused over and again on building greater ties between Tier 2 and Tier 3 companies and creating a supplier ecosystem between MSMEs on both sides.
Okay. And India and Japan are negotiating a new trade agreement. What should be the non-negotiables for India, and where should flexibility be shown to secure long-term strategic alignment?
I think the non-negotiables for India are not that much of a problem with regards to Japan, because India's agriculture sector and MSME sector, both of them will go relatively unharmed if we sign an agreement with Japan. So I think a bilateral trade arrangement with Japan should not be a problem for India or India's vulnerable sectors.
Okay. Rahul, looking ahead to 2036, the horizon for the 10 trillion yen target, what's your baseline forecast for India-Japan trade and investment?
I think Japan has already identified key sectors where it would want to invest in India, and India is already showing early signs of its openness for Japanese investment in these sectors. So I think, as I mentioned earlier, clean energy and technology and innovation sector, startups and defense, of course, and security areas, particularly the maritime sector, is where India and Japan could collaborate, and greater Japanese investments in these sectors could perhaps to the next level, where the potential for Japanese investment in India is optimally realized.
Okay. Professor Rahul Mishra, thank you for those incisive insights. What's clear is that this isn't just about trade numbers. It's about aligning two complementary economies to build resilience, technology leadership, and strategic depth in the Indo-Pacific. Thank you very much for being with Akashvani, Rahul.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
You are listening to a discussion on India-Japan economic synergy, expanding trade, investment and strategic partnerships. The participants were Professor Rahul Mishra, international affairs expert, and Rajesh Lekh, anchor. This program was produced and presented by the News Services Division of Akashvani. You can listen to it on our mobile app News on AIR. This program is also available on our YouTube channel News on AIR Official.
Money Talk.